you a high performer, obsessed with growth, and looking for an edge? Welcome to Mind Body Peak Performance. Together, we'll discover underground secrets to unlocking the full potential of your mind, body, and spirit. We'll learn from some of the world's leading minds, from ancient wisdom to cutting-edge tools and everything in between. This is your host, Nick Urban. Enjoy the episode. Peak performers, welcome to 2022. I hope your year's off to a good start, and if you listened to episode 32 with Dr. Dawson Church, you gave his eco-meditation practice a shot. I start off every year with a one-month metabolic reset, generally following a high-fat, moderate-protein, and virtually zero-carb diet to make sure my body keeps the right enzymes upregulated and makes intermittent fasting easy. But after that 1 month, I'll be tuning in to what my body needs most through a simple practice that we're covering in today's episode. Our guest this week is Sherry Traxler. She's an author, speaker, and coach that mentors private clients and teaches workshops to help executives and business owners create a lifestyle of authentic energy. For companies, she develops wellness cultures to improve health and productivity. You can find her courses at thevireolife.com, thevireolife.com. If reading's your thing, you can find her book, Go Forward, 28 Days to Eat, Move, and Enjoy Life God's Way on Amazon. Sherry holds a master's in health promotion, is a certified health coach, personal trainer, nutrition specialist, and intuitive eating counselor. She's a national speaker for the Medical Fitness Association, has led fitness episodes for Viacom Table, taught corporate wellness at Belmont University, and directed programs for 12 years at Vanderbilt Medical Center. Sherry is one of those fortunate folks who knew from childhood what she wanted to do, helping people live well. Today, we're exploring the concept of intuitive eating. Don't worry if you have no idea what that means or it sounds woo. You'll walk away understanding how this form of nutrition has a nearly perfect success rate. Sit back, relax, and join us in exploring intuitive eating. Tonight, we've got Sherry Traxler on the show. Sherry, welcome.
Thank you very much. It is great to be here, Nick.
It's good to have you. So let's start off with the usual wind-up question. So far today, what have you done? What unusual things have you done for your health and performance?
Unusual. Okay. One would be that I do vocal warm-ups in the morning. And it takes about 15 minutes to do that. And I found, I wasn't doing it like anything. You've got to incorporate it into your lifestyle. So I thought, well, why don't I just do it in the car on the way to the gym? So I did that.
And what's the purpose of that?
The purpose is because I speak, I don't want my voice to get worn out. And by doing a vocal warm-up, it helps to do that. And I use, if anybody's wanting to do that type of thing, Roger Love is the course, is the gentleman that I've, I figure if he is Tony Robbins and the Beach Boys vocal coach, he's good enough for me.
Yeah.
Let's see. Something else was, I changed up my meditation today. I decided I had a lot of energy going and just to sit and meditate sometimes doesn't work for that. So I did Tai Chi for my meditation today. And I guess those are the only two unusual things. I mean, everything else is pretty typical. Go for a run, lift weights, that kind of stuff.
How'd you get into Tai Chi?
I had an acupuncturist who was a friend of mine, and she also taught Tai Chi. So we just started doing it with her. And I only know one form, but that's okay. When I need it, I can use it.
I've heard that it's a good, subtle energy practice, but it takes a lot of patience because I forget who was mentioning it, but they said that their initial class was to stand in a single pose for 30 or 40 minutes.
Oh, heavens. That would have driven me nuts if she tried to teach us that way. No, the way that she taught it was we had each week, we would have four or five movements that you would do over and over and over again, because the, you know, to learn it, it's like anything, to become part of you, you have to drill.
Yeah.
And, but I can't imagine staying in one pose for that long. No, no, thank you. That would not okay. work for me.
Well, today's conversation is going to be not about Tai Chi, but about intuitive eating. But before we get started on that note, what's your background? How did you get interested in intuitive eating?
When I was a kid, and literally like first, second, third grade, I started developing what I call an evil twin and a good twin. So the good twin is the part of me that grew up in a family that was very health conscious. So, I mean, my earliest memories are going walking with my mom on the family farm. I grew up on a farm. It's being active, being out in sunshine and so forth. The evil twin, Nick, is that my family, especially the women in my family, dieted. And so I started getting into this diet mentality early on, went on my first diet in third grade. Wow. Just because, not because I quote unquote needed to from any kind of health or medical reason, just that's what we did. So I developed a diet mentality very early. And in my early to mid 20s, I realized this isn't working for me. This is really messing with my mind. And I remember I was at a work Christmas party, and I was in the bathroom terrified. And I wasn't terrified because of the party, the people. I was scared of the food. I was sitting in that bathroom, standing in that bathroom, coaching myself on, come on, Sherry, you can go out there and just eat the veggies that you brought. You can skip Sally's cookies. Well, but if you have one, you can just have one. You can control yourself on this. And I just had such a fear of losing control and thinking that there was something wrong with me. And it didn't dawn on me that there was nobody in line to get to, well, at this point, there may have been people in line, but there was nobody in line waiting to get in the restroom to coach themselves. And I was in it was a different work scenario. I was in a break room, and I saw a friend of mine eating and this is not a plug for Taco Bell, but he was eating a Taco Bell bean burrito. And Nick, when he got to the last bite, in my world, I would have been like, oh, I better eat this because I don't know when I'm going to let myself have this many carb grams or fat grams or whatever we were counting at the time. I'm going to go ahead and finish it. Or I would say, well, it's just one bite. Good grief. Go ahead and finish it. You know, who cares? He wrapped it up and put it in the fridge.
Wow.
And I looked at him and I said, Sean, what are you doing? And he said, I'm putting my burrito in the fridge. I said, no, it's only one bite. Why aren't you finishing it? And he looked at me just dumbfounded, Nick. He was like, because I'm not hungry. And that really blew my mind. That really made me think there is a different way of eating, because that was not what I grew up with. So at that point, I said, it's time for me to go on a journey to learn a better relationship with food. There weren't that many resources out there at that time. And I had to do a lot of the learning and testing and all that on my own. So eventually, as an exercise physiologist, and all of the training that I had had in college and grad school didn't really touch on this part of it. So I got certified as an intuitive eating counselor and was like, okay, I'm going to help other people get through their journey a whole lot faster than I did. So that is the full scope of background of what got me interested in this.
I played American football and rugby growing up, and it was drilled into us that you eat everything, you go back for more, you eat all of that, and you continue that until you can't eat anymore, and then you eat a little bit more. And that's the only way to gain enough weight to be competitive in those sports. And ever since then, I have a hard time just leaving a couple bites left. And like you were mentioning, I do the same where I'll see someone do that and just stop eating with a couple bites left in their plate and think to myself, like, okay, what are you going to do with that? Are you going to throw it away, or are you going to like eat it later? But then the idea of just finishing the meal when you're full rather than powering through,
yes,
is something that is still lost on me to an extent. And I'm more careful now about how much I serve myself, because otherwise I fall into that same trap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you know that you can always go back for seconds. You know, and it's interesting, Nick, that you mentioned this, because both of us dealt with what I call food rules. It was just two different ends of the spectrum. Mine was eat as little as possible. Yours was stuff yourself as much as possible.
Yeah. Well put. So what is the other approach if you don't want that, and say you're in one of our two camps, or you have what you consider to be an unhealthy relationship with food? Not saying that you do, but
if a person does.
Yes, if a person does, how do they start changing that?
Let me give you the four letters that I put for that I put together for intuitive eating. And it was fascinating to me that this was something through my own experience that I put together. And then when I got certified, I realized, oh, wait, they have a whole lot of other steps and a whole lot of other verbiage, but it all falls into these four letters that I'd already come up with. So
before you go into those, can you define like intuitive eating? Because it sounds like a very foreign concept to most people, and it did to me until this year.
Okay. In a nutshell, it is trusting, just like you did when you were an infant and a toddler, trusting that your body has a wisdom that will tell you what it needs, when it needs it, and how much it needs. And you cut out all of the noise, you cut out all of the messages, which is hard. You can't stop from seeing them, because every time you go through the grocery line, there's some magazine or some picture or some advertisement on TV or social media telling you this is good, this is bad, try this way of eating, try that way of eating. That is a rule outside of what your body's wisdom is. But when I say cut it out, it's the sense of you recognize, hey, that is something external to me, and it may or may not work for my body. So you tune in, and some of it's through experimenting, but it's basically recognizing, and I'll repeat it again so it gets into everybody's head listening, your body is wise, and it will tell you, if you listen to it, what it needs, when it needs it, and how much it needs.
Are there caveats to this? Because you can imagine in today's food environment that there's a lot of exceptions, and my mind or body might be telling me that I really want this donut and it might really feel like I want it, but that's probably not the right message.
Ooh, okay. One of the letters will let me address that.
Okay.
Because that definitely hits to one of the letters. Great, great question.
And so what are the benefits? Why would you want to follow this approach?
Well, let me first tell you about dieting and why you would not want to follow dieting. And then we just simply flip that same coin and it tells you why to follow intuitive eating. Dieting, we know that, and I'm talking about the dieting like that I did, not necessarily the stuff yourself completely like you were taught to do. With dieting, we know that within a year, the majority of people gain back most of weight that they lost. If somebody's doing it for weight loss, most of the weight that they lost on a diet. Within 5 years, 100% gain weight back.
Wow.
And what is really crazy to me is that over 30%, about 33%, gain back what they lost plus some. So they lose 10, they gain 20, they lose 20, they gain 30, and on it goes. Well, from a pure health standpoint, why that is so dangerous is yo-yo dieting, which is what I just described, increases significantly your cardiovascular disease risk. Mm-hmm. So if somebody says, oh, I'm 20 pounds overweight, I want to lose weight to get healthier, but they do it not through listening to their body, but through some kind of diet, the chances of them gaining that back and getting into this yo-yo dieting cycle actually puts them at more risk. Hmm. From a psychological standpoint, and I know that all of the listeners right now, everybody is really concerned about performance, not only physically, but performance mentally. Dieting, irrespective, please, you all hear me on this. Dieting, irrespective of weight, it's dieting itself, decreases self-esteem, decreases confidence, increases social anxiety. All those things that negatively impact our performance at work, in relationships, and so forth, take a hit when we diet. Let's flip that. Intuitive eating. With intuitive eating, because you are listening to your body, you don't ever get on that yo-yo stuff. No, you're not going to lose 5 pounds in a week, but what you're losing stays off because you are doing it the way that your body's calling you to do it. You are not going to have that increase in cardiovascular disease risk or other disease risk factors. You are going to increase your confidence because, let me chase this one for a second, Nick. With, if I am saying that this diet, this external set of rules knows better than I do what my body needs, it says, I can't trust my body. Mm-hmm. Therefore, I can't trust my intuition about, oh, should I get in this relationship? Oh, should I take this job? Should I do this project? You know, I lose trust in listening to myself. And then I also lose trust that I can do what I say I'm going to do. When you mentioned the donut, if you set up this arbitrary rule of I can't have XYZ, psychologically and physiologically, you're setting yourself up for failure. At some point, you're going to quote unquote cheat. You're going to do that. That's going to decrease your sense of integrity, which decreases also your sense of confidence. Mm. It's just this horrid effect. Versus if I'm intuitively eating, I'm like, oh, I'm physically hungry. I'm nourishing my body with this. That increases my confidence because it tells me, Sherry, you can trust yourself. You can trust yourself with food. You're not going to be in a bathroom, at a party, scared, worrying what's going on. You can trust yourself. What are your thoughts on that? Anything jump to mind for you?
Yeah, I can see how one leads to another, where if you start listening to your body around food, that carries over to other aspects of life. And also with when you follow the dieting approach, your body has memory over the changes. So when you lose the weight, it feels like there's a famine, and then it responds by altering hormones, your epigenetics change, and like you get extra skin. Even when you lose that weight, you still have like lasting changes. And with each of those, you set yourself up for more and more problems down the line.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it's like the, typically when people regain weight, they regain in the stomach. And that is the worst place to gain extra weight from a risk standpoint. One of the things that, and it's really interesting. One of the things that I see happen with my clients is how their confidence does increase overall, because, and you alluded to this, Nick, and what you said is our actions teach us what to believe. Your actions teach you what to believe. So when you are acting in line with what you say is best for you, when you're acting in line with you can be trusted, then that is reinforcing that on a subconscious level and impacts everything.
Yes. One other question I have around this is that I know that there's certain nutrients the body absolutely needs to perform, to live, I guess. Mm-hmm. Say magnesium, and certain foods are much higher in those nutrients than others.
Yeah.
I think I read somewhere that if you're deficient in magnesium, then you're more likely to crave magnesium-rich foods such as chocolate. And if you quell that deficiency, whether it be via food or supplementation, then some of those cravings disappear.
You said a really strong word there, and that is deficient. Mm-hmm. If my body is craving chocolate, or if I'm craving chocolate, that may be that I need magnesium. It may be my serotonin's low. I mean, it could be a myriad of types of things, or it could just be, I want chocolate. But if you are correct, if somebody is deficient in something, you're going to crave that. You know, you hear stories about women that are pregnant, you know, craving all kinds of different types of things. Well, yeah, because their bodies are so low in that whatever those particular nutrients are for them. If typically you eat what I call a powerful plate, and this is something I'll be glad to share with your audience. I've got a video as well as a graphic that will they can print out and put on their fridge to remind them of this. But if you're eating a powerful plate, which is a great mix of your healthy carbs, your proteins, your healthy fats, your vegetables, and a variety of those things, you're not going to get to a deficient state where you're craving a certain thing. So if I have a vitamin C deficiency, I'm going to crave broccoli or oranges or lemons or something like that. The flip side is if I didn't have enough vitamin C yesterday, I'm not going to crave it today because I'm not deficient.
Yeah. Okay.
Great question.
So what are those pillars you were talking about?
Okay. The four letters.
Yes.
Anybody taking notes, which I hope everybody is, write down H-W-S-S. H-W-S-S. H is for hunger. Am I physically hungry? And if you think about, and I'll run through a number scale really quick, on a scale of 1 to 10, 5 is neutral. Nick, I'm going to ask you right now, tune in for just a second to your body. What sensations, either in your stomach or in your body, what is it giving you around hunger? Are you in neutral right now? You don't have any sensation, or you have something saying, yeah, I would like to eat soon, or I ate a little bit too much a few hours ago. I'm still stuffed. Where are you?
So I'd say I'm still pretty full. I'd say I'm about like a 2 or 3.
Well, actually full goes the opposite direction. I haven't explained that to you yet. I apologize.
So that would put me at a 7 or 8.
Like a 6 or 7 or something like that. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So 5 is neutral. We'll go hunger scale first. Is a 4 is that intermittent hunger where, oh, you know, I've got a little bit of a hunger pain or a little bit of distraction, you know, mentally not able to concentrate as well. But then I get in a project that I'm really into and I don't notice the hunger. And then 30 minutes or an hour later, it comes back. That's a 4. A 3 is, I call pleasant hunger. It's consistent and it's when food tastes amazing. You sit down and plain broccoli tastes really good because you are truly hungry. A 2 and a 1, you don't really want to go there. That's when you are famished. And if we were at a buffet line, I would tackle you to get to my food, Nick. Sorry, but I would. If we go the opposite direction, like you were talking about, a 6 is you're beginning to feel the food, but you're not miserable in any way. A 7 and an 8, yes, you're feeling the food. It's actually starting to get uncomfortable. 9 and 10, that's Thanksgiving dinner. You're stuffed, rolling on the floor, never want to think about eating again. Ideally, you want to start eating no earlier than a 4, but ideally around a 3. That's not always possible. You know, there are going to be times that you go, you look at your watch and you go, ooh, I'm only at a 4.5, but it's going to be 4 hours till I get a chance to eat again. I better go ahead and grab a little something. But in an ideal world, you start eating around a 3. The W, here's where we're going to get to that donut. W is what do I really want? And want has a whole lot of layers to it. What do my taste buds want? Do they want something crunchy, something salty, something sweet, something soft, something squishy, some whatever, you know, what texture, what taste? What do I want to feel like 2 hours from now? You know, I could eat a couple of bites of a donut because I want that taste or that texture. Oh, but you know, the last time I had a whole donut, I felt crummy 2 hours later. I better not eat the whole thing. It's listening to what you want then, what you want to feel like in a couple of hours. And here's where the health comes in. What do I want long-term? And this is not about some quote unquote diet, and it's not about food rules that say you can never have this. It's, do I really want this? 2 bites of a donut, 1 entire donut is not going to destroy you. I mean, if you're dealing with a medical issue, that's a whole nother animal. Yeah. But if you're not dealing with a medical issue that requires something, then it's like, do I really want this? And one trick with this is, let's take that donut, is it's not just, do I want this donut? It's, do I want this next bite? Pay attention when you're eating something, the intensity of the first bite, the intensity of the second bite, the intensity of the third bite, And notice that around the fourth, fifth, or sixth bite, that intensity of flavor decreases.
Yes.
At that point, that's your body saying, I've had enough of that for right now. And if the goal is to get the most pleasure out of the food that you can, you put it to the side knowing that you can. There's no restriction, so you know you can have it again whenever you really want it. You're not going to deprive yourself. So you can put it to the side, know you can have it again later, tomorrow, whenever. And when you are then able to pay attention that way, it means you're also doing the first S, which is slow and savor. If I grab that donut and I'm munching on it while I'm checking my email, I blow right past when the taste decreases.
Yeah.
I just eat the whole thing and I go, where did it go? I don't even remember finishing it. I don't remember eating it. Psychologically, I'm not satisfied. So then what do I go do?
Eat more.
Yeah, you eat more. It's like, oh, I didn't even experience that donut, so I'm going to go get another one. That is where we get ourselves in trouble. It's not the three or four or the handful of chips that you have with the sandwich at lunch. It's the bag of chips in front of the TV that you're not slow and savoring, because when you don't slow and savor, you don't do that last S, which is stop when you're physically satisfied. So you start at a three on that hunger scale. You choose, what do I really want? What would be the most satisfying to me right now? You pay attention to it as you're eating it. You notice when the intensity of the flavor decreases. You notice when your stomach is no longer growling, when your energy starts to come back up. And then you stop when you're satisfied, knowing that the next time you're physically hungry, you can eat again. And that's the cycle we were all born with. You know, when you watch kids, they will eat something, and then once they are no longer hungry, they are playing with their food and throwing it on the wall and throwing it on the floor.
Do you think it's a bad thing that the intensity of the flavor quickly diminishes? Because I've also read that when you go to a buffet and you have all those options in front of you, you're more likely to overeat because you can get those first four, five, six bites that are the most powerful and do that across 9, 10 different foods.
Mm-hmm. You want to pay attention to both the physical hunger that's going on in your stomach, as well as the taste diminishing. So if you're paying attention to both, don't be scared of a buffet. You know, go to the buffet and maybe you're only going to take one or two bites of each of the things you want to really try. You get a massive amount of pleasure because they're each different. But the other thing is, once you begin to not just when your taste buds get accustomed, but when you are physically getting no longer hungry, desserts, even things that have a lot of intense flavor, I won't say they taste like cardboard, but they're getting pretty close. And it's funny that you mentioned the buffet thing, because I was either today or yesterday, I forget which it was, I was eating something that I wish I could remember what it was, but obviously it made a big impact on me. It was just something I would normally have. Maybe it was some kind of goat cheese thing or whatever. And I remember I was really hungry. I was at a good three, had those first few bites. And because I was really hungry, it was more than three bites before it went to cardboard. But I've trained myself. So I noticed, oh, that just went to cardboard. I'm done. Even though there was a few bites left, my stomach was fine. My taste buds were fine, and move on.
I think one of the big things here is to separate work or other activities and eating, because I know if I do that after bite one of pretty much anything, if I'm trying to multitask, I can't even remember what the sensation of eating was like.
Right. Right. Absolutely. And again, we don't want to set up rules in the sense of, oh gosh, you've got a deadline and you're famished. You know, I've got a choice between, you know, working and eating. What we are saying is, what is your lifestyle? If your lifestyle is such that you never have 15 or 20 minutes to sit down and focus on your food, we need to look at your lifestyle. I have had people say, oh gosh, I remember once somebody said, you want me to just sit nothing? That would be so boring. okay, that means we either need to look at what you're eating, that it's not exciting enough, or it means that you need to learn to be okay with being bored for a few minutes of your life because there's so much going on. Maybe it'll give you time with your thoughts to quietly, you know, just let everything settle, which means you're going to digest better anyway. And the other thing is always with that of it's okay to be a little bored, because if I'm bored when I'm eating, I'm not going to just keep eating. Once I'm full enough, it's very easy to put the food away because something else looks more exciting. In fact, sometimes that is one of my tests personally of if I'm full or not. If I come to the table at a 3, my food has my full attention because I'm hungry. When I notice my mind starting to wander back to a work project, or I want to go do this, or I want to go watch that, oh, wait, maybe I'm not as physically hungry as I was because my mind is going to something else.
Hmm. What are your thoughts on, like, for those that eat with either friends or a partner and they have like that innate disconnection from purely focusing on the food because there's other stimuli? It's harder to notice when you get bored of a food because you're in, like, say, a thought-provoking discussion.
Okay. The way that I do that with friends or with my husband is twofold. One is when I can make the conversation around the food, I do that. It's like, oh, I think this has a cumin spice in it, or I think this has you get more in touch with the food when you're talking with somebody about the food and trying to figure out what's in the recipe. The other piece, and my husband has learned this about me, I am very engaged when I'm talking and I'm very engaged when I'm listening. So my stomach tightens up and it's hard for me to digest food when I'm in this intense conversation, not bad conversation, just really engaged with it. And I'm not able to settle. So sometimes after a first few bites to take the edge off my hunger, I'll just put my fork down and then engage for a minute or two, take another couple bites, engage for a minute or two, take another bite, allow myself to breathe and relax my stomach muscles, and just slow everything down. Sometimes playing a game with myself of trying to be the last one to finish eating. That means I've eaten slowly enough in amongst the conversation. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I do some of those same things. I wrote an article on like my top ways to be more mindful around food, and I'll share a couple of them right now. One of them was to put your fork down in between bites, like you just said. That makes a big difference for me because it makes eating a less automatic process and it becomes intentional. Mm-hmm. Another is that I use smaller silverware and cutlery, plates, bowls, all that. So if I want to get more, I have to actually go out, get up, walk over, and then serve it. And then along those same lines, I will a lot of times use chopsticks to eat because then I have to like focus on the food. And chopsticks, unless you're a master, which I'm not, require smaller bites. And if I start getting good with them again, then I switch to my opposite hand, my non-dominant hand, to really slow me down.
Oh, that is brilliant, Nick. I love that. I'm stealing that. I might eat my chopsticks. I might eat with chopsticks tonight.
Uh-huh. And one other thing I like to do is before I start eating, I like to, if I'm with someone, spend a couple seconds just like pausing, breathing, engaging the parasympathetic, because when you are able to do that, you digest and absorb the food better. Mm-hmm. Plus, it's nice to have that ritual before eating.
Yes, I completely agree. And I would say the additional thing for me is knowing that you get to control your own environment, even if it's just you personally, your little own bubble. And if a conversation at a meal with friends, maybe it's not a pleasant, engaging conversation. Maybe there's, you know, some type of conversation going on that's getting you irritated or frustrated. And you feel like, oh, I am not going to enjoy this meal. My digestion, it's just tense, whatever. If you're out, you can always get a to-go box and go eat it later. If you are at home, you can always, you know, eat it later. You can, or you can say, hey, can we talk about that over coffee when we're done eating? Just know that you don't have to engage your sympathetic system. You can always come back to your control of your parasympathetic. Great, great idea.
And one thing I've noticed along those lines is that if something comes up that causes me to get stressed out, whether it's a work message, it's a conversation, I've worn a little device called a continuous glucose monitor, which shows how my blood sugar changes in near real time. And even if I eat the healthiest, cleanest meal possible, but I'm stressed by something, even a micro stress, if it's long enough and it bothers me enough, it'll make the meal have the same effect on my blood sugar as a highly processed meal. So I think that's sound advice to wait if you're in that state until you calm down a bit.
Nick, that is absolute brilliance. And it speaks to why one of the reasons that when people set up, I can have this, but I can't have that. I can eat this, but I can't eat that. That's only one part of the story, because you just proved that I can eat a sweet potato and chicken, and it's going to be just like if I had had a donut, if I'm in a different psychological state.
Yeah. What are some of the other tips you have for folks that are interested in going down this path and starting to tap into their body, follow its cues, and commit to, or I guess test, even just test intuitive eating?
Yeah. Test is a great word for that. One is take that HWSS and choose two of the letters. And again, I've got a video on this that goes a little more in depth and some other resources. Happy to share with anybody who wants those. But as you look at HWSS, pick the one that you think is easiest for you, and then pick the one that you think is going to have the highest ROI. So Nick, for you, which of those four sounds like, oh, that would be a breeze for me to try this next week?
Slowing down.
Okay. So that's a no-brainer. So over the next week, you're just like, each time I eat, I'm either going to put my fork down more often, or you can also do a half meal pause. Is that halfway through your meal, you set everything down and you just give yourself a couple of minutes to breathe, get back into parasympathetic, and then check in. Am I still hungry? I am. Great. Keep eating. I'm not. Okay. I'm done. What would be the one that you feel would give the greatest ROI if you went to the next level?
Stopping when I'm full.
Okay.
Or after the food loses its same flavor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when you are, maybe you just do that half pause and you then go back for your next bite and it doesn't have quite the same oomph, like, well, maybe I'm done. And this is a trial and error. I remember when I was first doing this, it was easy for me to undereat a little bit. And then I was ready for my next meal an hour and a half, 2 hours later. I'm like, okay, I didn't eat quite enough. So, and I mean, some people graze all day and they're comfortable with that. I prefer to get hungry every 3 to 5 hours. So, you know, you do some adjusting, but stopping when you're satisfied, that's a really great one. One of the things I'll say with the thinking about the sweets and the intensity of the flavor, one of the things, there's so much that somebody can do with testing out intuitive eating for themselves. But one of the things I've noticed is that first one, two, or three bites that's so intense of flavor, you may catch yourself continuing to eat something because you're chasing that initial taste, and it's not going to happen again, not until a few hours later. And so you might as well stop instead of trying to chase and get, oh my goodness, that first bite of the tiramisu was so good. Why can't it taste like that again? Well, it's not going to until tomorrow night. So there you go.
Yeah. I noticed that there's definitely a hedonic treadmill there where you take the one bite, you're like, oh, that was so good. Let me just have another one. You take the second bite, it's not quite as good. You're like, okay, like maybe the third one I'll do it. And then you just keep chasing it. And by the time you look down and realize you've eaten the whole thing, you're still not satisfied.
Right. Yeah. Cause you're, and that's where when you give yourself, there's a key phrase here I want you to listen and everybody listening to catch, is unconditional permission. If you are giving yourself unconditional permission to have whatever you want, whatever you really want, when you want it, then, and you take all these rules off, then you know, oh, you know, that third bite of the tiramisu or donut or whatever it is. I love tiramisu, so I'm using mm-hmm. that one. I love it, but I have not had it in years and years and years. Why? Because I know I can have it anytime I want it. So I don't want it. Anyway, so you have this bite and you're just chasing it. But if you know it's not as pleasurable as it was, I can have it again whenever I want, then great, you have it. One quick exercise that I, and this would be a great challenge. It's one thing I'm going to do with the people who come to my Break Free retreat that's end of September, is an intuitive eating experience. You can do this at home on your own. Is get several different items that you think you really like, put two or three bites on a plate, and go through and test them. I did this with a client once who she thought she really loved this particular brand of pretzels. But when she did this experiment and she didn't have any kind of dip on it, she was just sitting there, no distractions, nothing else going on, put this pretzel in her mouth and she was said, "This is horrible. Why in the world do I like these?" But she was used to eating them mindlessly with dip at night in front of the TV. Totally different than in light of day, just eating the pretzels. So she was able to find something that she liked even better that also mm-hmm. happened to be better for her body, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. So I challenge anybody listening, do the find the two letters and then do an experiment.
What are some of the other cues outside of intuitive eating in your experience as you've tuned in more to your body? Like, what other cues does it give you?
Well, let's use the munchies. I love that question, Nick. Let's use the munchies as a cue, as a what do I need finder. I'm just going to point blank ask you, nobody, you all, this is not rehearsed. So Nick, have you ever gotten the munchies?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. And have you ever gotten the munchies for something when you're not physically hungry?
Yes.
Okay. Next time that happens, and for everybody, pay attention to this. Those munchies are a cue that you need something. But we are, in our culture, are so attuned to quickly going to food to solve everything that that's our go-to. So going back to the parasympathetic system, it's hard to listen when everything is going crazy. So give yourself a 120-second pause. When you have, you're working on something, maybe you've got a stressful email you're working on, your whatever it is you're doing, and you've got this, you know, you're irritated at a coworker. You just, oh, I want to go grab this or I want to go grab that. You ask yourself, am I physically hungry? No, I'm not, but I want to go eat this anyway. That's your cue. Set a timer, 120 seconds. Do nothing. Turn all the noise off and just breathe. And as you are quiet, it will bubble up whatever you need. Do you need a nap? Do you need to send that email that you've been procrastinating, writing and sending? Is there a relationship that it's in the back of your mind nagging at you, you're irritated about it and you need to go confront or at least figure out when you're going to have a conversation? Whatever it is that's going on that's causing you to want to crave comfort or, you know, cover it up or whatever with food, it'll give you a chance to go, all right, my body is telling me something. What is it? And if it's not food, it's something else going on.
You're right. Hunger really does hijack the way you feel. I discovered that a long time ago when I wake up ravenously hungry in the mornings, and I was thinking to myself, how do people fast if you feel this way at this time? It's 7 a.m. I'm already ravenously hungry. Yeah. And then I realized it wasn't hunger, it was thirst. And I just wasn't tuning into my body enough. And so once I drank the water, then all of a sudden my hunger subsided.
Yeah. Yeah. And water is, from a hunger standpoint, you did brilliantly. Water is a great test for that. Whenever I am feeling physically hungry, but I'm thinking, oh, it's only been a couple hours since I ate, or, you know, it's been 3 hours, but I've not worked out. Well, you know, I drink my water. And if within 20, 30 minutes, the hunger comes back, guess what? I really was hungry. Who knows why? It is what it is. Trust my body. Go with it. But if it's not hunger, the water will quell all that. Mm-hmm. Yep.
How do you feel about fasting, whether intermittent, time-restricted eating, or extended?
Oh, we would have to go there, wouldn't we? All right, Nick. Spiritual fast. So we'll go that route first. You didn't ask about that, but I'll go there. If someone is fasting purely for spiritual reasons, or because their emotions are off kilter and they need to do an emotional reset, and so they're going to take a day to fast and journal and pray and just, you know, get away from the world and, you know, really get in tune with what's going on in their body, that's a different thing. Mm-hmm. But what you're asking about specifically is intermittent fasting in the weight loss world, the fad that's going on right now for that. There are some people that mentally do better with it. There are some people that it fits their body clock better as far as, you know, their sleep schedule and just how they function physically. Mm-hmm. If that is how you have tested and that you've tested and experimented and you personally find you do best and perform best and feel best, and there's no guilt, because diets and rules around that bring a lot of guilt. And there's no guilt if, man, on Thursday, I was going to not have breakfast, but I had to have it. And you're like, and you had it and you're like, great, fine. And you move on. Then you're not doing it so much for diet mentality as you are, this is just how my personal body feels best. Great. However, I've only met, I can count them on less than one hand, number of people that's the case for. Most people are doing it because it's a fad or it helped a friend to lose weight or so forth. The people it doesn't work for. And I had a client who we'd already taken her through an intuitive eating journey. Nick, I was so sad because she was free from the diet mentality. And then somebody talked her into trying intermittent fasting. And she was like, oh, okay, I'll try that. I don't advise it, but I'm not you. If you want to try it, within 2 weeks, she had started putting on weight. And it was because at night, knowing that the next morning she was going to be hungry for several hours, she was stuffing herself at night and overeating.
What about things or compounds, say coffee, that suppress the body's natural hunger?
So if I'm hearing you right, somebody says, hey, I want to do intermittent fasting, but wow, I'm really hungry in the mornings.
Or not even just intermittent fasting, just their body tells them they're hungry in the morning. And so instead of eating, they just drink coffee and then go for the rest of the day, they go for hours without eating.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, they're messing up their metabolism. They're dropping their metabolism and messing with their bodies. It's something that if you do it one day, because that's what your schedule called for, it's not going to hurt you. But if you're doing that day after day after day, yes, eventually you will mess up your body system.
Okay. Let's start to wind down. Tell me, what are you most interested in researching these days?
Personally is Enneagram. I've been doing a ton of personal work on that. When I first heard about it, I thought, oh, good grief, I've done a gazillion personality profile things out there. This one's not going to teach me anything. But I was still struggling with a couple of things, and my business coach uses it for him. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, okay, well, I'll check it out. And for a few months now, I have been digging into it and blowing my mind on understanding where my growth path needs to go.
Wow. If someone wants to get a hold of you, to work with you, to find your resources and the material you've created, how can they join your tribe?
Okay. The best thing to do is go to my website, which is thevireolife.com, thevireolife.com, or just reach out to me directly, Sherry@thevireolife.com. And Sherry is S-H-E-R-I.
Where does Vireo come from?
Vireo means, and I particularly chose this tense of the word, means I flourish, I thrive, I am strong and active. So that's what I want. That's what I want for the world. That's what I want for everybody I work with.
Yeah. I have a couple more questions for you before the lightning round.
Okay.
If there was a burning of the books and all knowledge on earth is gone, you get to save the works of three teachers. It can be books, podcasts, YouTube videos, articles, whatever you want. What would you choose and why?
Okay, I'm going to cheat on one of them because technically it's 66 books, but it's the Bible. So that would definitely be one. I think there's wisdom in that for every area of life. Mm-hmm. Stephen Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, classic that again, just has a lot of tools for life. And I believe mindset is so critical that, well, pretty much anything by Norman Vincent Peale.
Mindset by, I thought it was by Carol Dweck.
Oh, not the book Mindset, but that the concept of mindset and positive thinking. So anything by Norman Vincent Peale.
Yeah. Okay, cool. If you were to have a virtual board of directors for your life, you have to run every decision through them and come up with, or I guess, and hear what they have to say before you make your final choice. Who would you choose?
Definitely my business coach, John Michael Morgan. My mother. And then my husband, because he's got a lot of great insights.
Perfect. You got a team by your side.
Yep.
Okay. A couple more questions in the rapid fire round. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Outside of intuitive eating, what's the number one thing that you believe that virtually no one else does?
From a physical exercise standpoint, your body doesn't care how it moves. It just wants to move.
Okay. Sherry, how would you like to conclude our journey together tonight? Any final parting thoughts?
Pleasure stacking. Let's go there. Pleasure stacking, I think, is one reason, one of many, but it's one reason that people go into food first versus enjoying life. So my challenge is make a list. And Nick, I challenge you to do this as well. Make a list of 10 things that just bring you immense pleasure other than foods that you like. And over the next 7 days, do them all. And they don't have to be complicated. It could just be, I love the feel of the sun on my skin when I'm walking. Pay attention to it. The problem is a lot of these things we do, we just don't pay attention to them. So bring a mindfulness and an awareness to them over the next week.
Yeah. Apply the same intuitive approach to the things that bring you pleasure.
Yeah.
Well, Sherry, it's been a pleasure having you on the show tonight. I've enjoyed learning about intuitive eating and I guess tapping into your body's innate wisdom in a myriad of different ways. Thanks for your time tonight.
Thank you so much. It has been a pleasure.
I'm Nick Urban here tonight with Sherry Traxler of mindbodypeak.com signing out. Have a good week. Thank you for tuning in to this episode. Head over to Apple Music, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts and leave a rating. Every review helps me bring you thought-provoking guests. As always, you can find the show notes for this one at mindbodypeak.com/episode. There, you can also chat with other peak performers or connect with me directly. The information depicted in this podcast is for information purposes only. Please consult your primary healthcare professional before making any lifestyle changes.